today is more of a brief discussion to talk about where we've been and where we're going with this project. I'll touch base a little bit on the details of the alternatives, but we're really going to, I think, shelve a lot of the conversations, the detailed conversations, until the 23rd, when there's a public meeting where more people can be part of the conversation. And we'll also have some more maps, a lot more charts, numbers, details that we can talk about one-on-one at side tables, so everyone can really get their questions answered that way. But overall, let me provide a brief timeline of where we've been. In 2007, Breckenridge Ski Resort came to the White River National Forest with a new master development plan. The master development plan is a conceptual document that talks about the goals, the vision of the ski resort, what they want to do in the future, what they want to be, and what kind of services they want to provide. The Forest Service has a planning process, and we accept those master plans conceptually, and then site-specific projects such as Peak 6 come forward in separate processes and separate applications. In late 2007, Breckenridge Ski Resort came to the White River with a fairly detailed proposal for Peak 6 development. In January 2008, we scoped that, which means we presented that initial proposal to the public. We had a couple public meetings, we had some field trips, and we had over 200 comments that came back from residents, from people in foreign countries, from the Front Range, from the town council, from the county. And I want to say up front, we heard you loud and clear. We recognize that there were a lot of social issues as well as environmental issues that were surfaced from your letter and your comments. And we've spent the last 3 years basically trying to figure out ways to best address those while still meeting the purpose and need for the project. A lot of those social issues were kind of new to the agency. We knew that there was, that Breckenridge is a busy town, and in the winter months it can be kind of a crowded place, but great skiing opportunities. And so while the Forest Service usually addresses issues and impacts on the mountain, we don't have all the expertise to address impacts, let's say in the town, parking issues, worker housing, ambulance service, those kind of concerns that we didn't feel we could best address. In the draft environmental impact statement that just came out, I think we included a very comprehensive analysis of what the impacts may be. But we also weren't part of, we didn't have that much management authority, per se, to talk about how we can control things in town. So a task force was developed between the county, Breckenridge Ski Resort, the town of Breckenridge, to basically figure out how can we put our heads together, how can we come up with figure out what the issues really are, if they're actually addressed, if they're part of the Peak 6 process, or are they just regular town issues? And then how do we perhaps develop some solutions to those challenges, to those planning challenges? Task Force did a great job. Forest Service representatives sat in on a lot of those meetings. I think they made a lot of progress, and I think it was a discussion that needed to happen from all sides, and I think it was a beneficial process for everybody. And I think a lot of us look forward to maintaining that process throughout the planning process and perhaps future projects at Breckenridge. What else we've done in the last few years? We've done a comprehensive analysis. I'm not sure if everyone's seen this, but this is the result of 3 years of planning. We're not, at least a few of us in the agency aren't proud of 600 pages of federal paperwork, but we feel in this circumstance, we wanted to be as transparent as we could. We didn't want to bury a bunch of documents in the project record. We wanted to have a lot of that information and analysis up front for the public. We also have those on CDs, so we're not chopping down half of Peak 5 or Peak 4 to print those things.
That'll come in the next proposal.
Alternative 3 was developed. We developed another action alternative to basically address a lot of those social issues and environmental issues that came forward. And I'll get into that in a little bit. We've also basically developed a lot of design features, and we've been doing a lot of fine-tuning on the proposed action in Alternative 3 based on a lot of current field data and a lot of input from the community and some of our partners throughout the Breckenridge community. Briefly, I'll go over the proposed action in Alternative 3. A lot of you, this isn't the first time you've seen these maps, but the draft EIS analyzes three alternatives. One is required by federal regulations, that's called the no-action alternative. And basically what that does is provide a baseline for the effects. What's currently happening out there right now for the recreation resource? What does parking look like in town right now? And then we have two action alternatives, alternative two and alternative three, that basically look at addressing the purpose and need for action. The purpose and need for this project is, it's fairly lengthy in this document, but overall we're trying to better accommodate the current and the anticipated use, the visitation levels of the Breckenridge Ski Resort. We want to do that by increasing terrain capacity as well as lift capacity. We also want to increase the comfortable carrying capacity of the resort, and that basically means we need to provide a certain level of services so that guests enjoy themselves, but they're not waiting an hour and that kind of thing. Proposed action is what we originally scoped in January of 2008. It's had a lot of modifications since. The maps maybe look similar right now to the maps of 3 years ago, but there's been a lot of fine-tuning on the ground to make these as environmentally friendly as possible. In general, we're looking at 550 acres of skiing, of additional skiing, that's lift served, that's also hiked to in these blue and green, blue areas. We're looking at one new lift, six-person lift that's starting in this area near Monte Cristo, if you're familiar with the mountain, and doing a dog leg with a mid station. This is also going to function as a restaurant. And we have a top terminal in the saddle near Peak 6. We're also going to have a ski patrol warming hut. Not a big structure, 500 square feet, so that's fairly small footprint. But we need to provide some guest patrol or ski patrol and guest service services in that area based on the anticipated visitation levels we see Peak 6 bringing. Changes from the initial proposal. The lift was originally just coming straight down to here. We figured that for better access, and because a lot of this is in the intermediate terrain, it's better to kind of bring it into a current area where guests can better access that area. Hike 2 terrain is on the top, and it's kind of self-explanatory. A lot of it's you're accessing it from the top of Imperial. That's going to be a narrow corridor. You can access it this way if you want. You can also come in to the bottom station. Alternative 3 was developed in response to a number of issues. Some social issues, backcountry access being one of them, but mostly a lot of environmental concerns. Some soil and soil concerns, watershed concerns, some wildlife concerns, as well as scenic and visuals, just to minimize perhaps scenic impacts. Alternative 3 was, we initially coined it the infill alternative because what we were looking at trying to do is meet the purpose and need, but try to do it within the current operational boundary, which means the current rope line at Breckenridge. It was very challenging. I think if those of you who know the mountain and those of you who are just looking at the map, there's a lot more white here than there is green. And if it's green, it's probably for a good reason. Breckenridge has really done a great job in terms of filling in these pods from peaks 7 through 10. There wasn't that much terrain available to create new runs. In the end, we found 12 runs that we can basically create within the current operational boundary. We're also doing some widening of existing runs to allow more skiable terrain. That comes with some consequences, though. We have some grading associated with down by Sawmill Creek that to widen that area and to basically meet soils and watershed conditions, we needed to do some cutting and filling, and retaining wall needs to go in there. So they don't come without consequence. It's not like we can just build a new trail in there and everything's done. And as you know, with more trails comes more congestion. Sometimes intersections become more dangerous. So we really needed to sit down and look at every one of these trails individually and say, is this going to create an initial problem that's worse than what we started with? We're also looking at developing some terrain just north of Peak 7. That'll be gladed to provide a little bit of more intermediate terrain and more of that some hike-tuned terrain as well. That's part of the purpose and need. But it was tough coming up with additional acreage, especially intermediate terrain. And part of that purpose and need as well is that Breckenridge has a kind of a shortage of beginner, intermediate, and advanced intermediate terrain. Breckenridge is a family resort. They pride themselves on that. And we have a lot of people coming in that aren't expert skiers, or people from the Front Range that love skiing. They love the Breckenridge experience. They can't handle the high stuff. They're on the blue squares. At the end of the day, you've got people that are egressing. You've got the experts all swimming through a lot of that intermediate terrain, so it's pretty crowded.
Is there a lift there, Roger?
Yes, and then there's also going to be a new lift, four-person, to access this new terrain. This was very challenging to come up with. We wanted a viable alternative as an alternative to this, but it was very challenging given the current terrain considerations and still limiting our footprint north and south this way. Just to throw that out there, from intermediate terrain, I think you asked this morning, proposed action is going to give us 244 acres of intermediate terrain. Alternative 3 is going to give us 130 acres. So as much as we tried, we really couldn't get it, that terrain, as much as we looked for it. No restaurant, no patrol building associated with Alternative 3. Also looking at snowmaking on those new trails to basically improve the skiable terrain and the snow surface. As part of Alternative 3, we're also looking at doing some lift upgrades. A chair and C chair are going to go to four-person lifts, and then Colorado Super Chair will be upgraded to a six-person. So you're going to help out with lift line wait times, going to get some better circulation, but still not going to be as great as what we've analyzed for the proposed action.
Roger, why didn't six chair, didn't you have any sort of upgrade on six chair that was approved with Imperial Express?
I don't know. I can't answer that question. You might be able to answer that on the 23rd, or I can get back to you personally on that. We looked at a lot of ways to get a lot of bang for our buck in terms of what, you know, can we, with the upgrade of one chair, how can we, you know, improve that recreational experience, dealing with the metrics that we're looking at, lift line, wait times, capacity, terrain density, that kind of thing.
What year was that?
05 is when Imperial and Peak 6 got the upgrade.
So these are the two alternatives in general, and that's an overview. Scott will talk about his preferred alternative, which is the proposed action. On the 23rd, he'll provide his rationale for why he thinks that's the best way to move forward right now. Contrary to what was printed in the Denver Post this Saturday, no decision has been made yet. We're still in the planning process. We're looking very much to, we're looking forward to all of your comments, especially the towns. And one other component I'll throw out there too, because I know it's an issue or it's been brought up, is that there will be a non-significant kind of one-time only forest plan amendment for this process. And that's dealing with Canada Links issues. We'll talk more about that on the 23rd, but both alternatives, alternatives 2 and 3, basically include from the NEPA speak, from an environmental planning speak, it's called a non-significant forest plan amendment. And what that basically means is we're not changing the forest plan per se, but this project, one time only, we're saying forest plans, one certain forest plan standard regarding the management of Canada Links doesn't apply to this project for a number of reasons.
That's the link standard.
Yes. So those are the alternatives. With that, I'll just throw it out. Any general questions that perhaps Jan or I can answer?
So alternative to proposed action is what you're going to suggest is the preferred plan.
Yes. And we'll talk about next steps, how where we are in the planning process now, and what that means for the rest of the process. But all the preferred alternative means is that Scott Fitzwilliams, who's the deciding official now, has taken a look at this 600-page analysis and says, you know, trying to balance everything out, that he still thinks the proposed action is the best way to move forward.
And he'll tell us why.
Mm-hmm. He'll tell us why, for sure.
And this 45-day comment period is our opportunity to take a look at the draft EIS and give feedback on that. Tell them what you think should be different, what you like, what you don't like, why.
And we're trying something new with this project. We have a fantastic new website, BreckenridgePeak6.com. I think a lot of you have seen it. But we're trying to make things a little bit more modern within the agency. And so of course we have to go outside the agency to create the website. But it's kind of one-stop shopping. You're gonna get a lot of the project background, newsletters, documents, the whole EIS is downloadable. And then, you know, to really facilitate comments analysis, you can basically click on any paragraph and comment, and it's almost like track changes. And so it's a really convenient way for you to go through the document to provide your comments, but it's also easier on our end, I think, or hopefully it will be, to basically categorize those and analyze those, because I know we're going to get a lot of great comments from you.
What are your thoughts on the extension people have been talking about?
Extension?
The time
comment
extension.
Period?
You know, if it's needed, it's needed. I think what we've tried to do, and we tried planning this fairly carefully, is 45-day comment period is normal for an EIS, for a draft EIS. It's the minimum time required, but it's usually sufficient. 90% of the time, don't quote me on that, but it's sufficient. We try to provide a draft EIS do these meetings upfront as soon as possible. Have a public meeting where you can basically ask questions and learn more about the project a little bit into the process. So you still have time to you have some time to digest it, and you know, go through maybe chapters one or two or just the summary before you get to that meeting and ask questions. But then after that meeting, it gives you plenty of time to kind of think about it and write your comments. The field trip, July 14th. Part of that is due to weather. You guys had a little bit of snow this year. I was in Europe. We didn't have a winter, but you guys had a fantastic winter. It's still up there. I was kind of dreaming a little bit today during lunch. But having that field trip as soon as we could, still providing about 10 days afterwards to get your comments in. We felt that was sufficient. If it's not, only you can tell us that, but we're hoping that that'll be sufficient for a majority of the respondents out there. And we're also holding another public open house in the Front Range. It's July 7th. And you know, a lot of our visitors aren't just from Breckenridge, not Glenwood Springs, but they come from the Front Range. And instead of having everyone drive up and have that red snake coming up from the Front Range, why not go to them and present this to them? It's something we don't do much, but honestly, they're a significant portion of our skiing public. So we're gonna bring a meeting down to them, do this kind of same format that we're gonna have on the 23rd, and hopefully that'll, we'll get a lot of comments from the people that drive up too.
And people are welcome to come to that from up here. I mean, if they've had a chance to hear the first meeting, go to the first meeting and digest it and want to have another conversation, that'd be great.
So again, to recap, on the 23rd, Scott's going to give a presentation. I don't think we've figured out the time yet, but he's going to give one kind of presentation to everybody. But we're also going to have a lot of maps. We're going to have a lot of other figures out there. And we'll have myself and a few others from the forest there to answer a lot of those one-on-one detailed questions, because I know you do. I know, Jeff, you're going to have a lot of just very detailed questions that are important to ask, but perhaps this isn't the best environment for that.